All right, you go ahead and ask me.
Okay, we can remember, we can always rub it off. We can do anything with this. This is not a like an ordinary film. Okay?
Yep.
Well, it's a great pleasure to welcome Ayanna Mayer, who is an anthropologist in her own right and who is going to talk to us about specifically about the problems of being a woman anthropologist in the field. But can I start, Ayanna? When did you marry Philip Mayer, who we've just talked to?
We married in 1946.
1946. Was that before Philip had become an anthropologist, or...?
Well, he was just on the way. And I had first graduated in history at Oxford, and then had an academic career in mind, but turned my back on that because I wanted something more practical and more human. So I'd gone into an administrative job connected with post-war relief. And then that didn't seem human enough either, so I trained for social work. And I got my diploma in July, and we married the next week and went straight out to the field.
I would love to have asked you about the LSE in the early 40s, but perhaps we'd better move on to the Gusai and Africa straight away.
Right.
When you arrived in around the
Kusi,
can you say what your first? Do you remember what your first impressions?
Well,
were?
I have often looked back on this with interest to think how naive I was humanly then. Although I was not, I would say, not intellectually naive, or not considering that I was only 23 and had no background. I think I was intellectually, you know, fairly well on the ball. But it was because I was humanly naive that I missed such a lot. I was very shy, and I was not really capable of making a true human relation. It was the first time I'd ever been outside England, practically, let alone outside Europe or in the colonial world. And I, instead of making positive efforts to break through my shyness barrier, I just thought, oh well, you know, this is scholarly work and I'm looking at the people's institutions and I'm very interested in the data. I missed out a tremendous lot that way.
What to begin with, what was your role in the field work? Were you given a specific role, or were you just tagging along at the beginning, or...?
Well, I had been appointed as Philip's assistant. I got £16 a month. It sounds terrible, but if you translate it, I suppose it's more like, what, £200 a month. And it was kind of assumed in a way that I would, quote, do the women and girls, unquote. And in my intellectual arrogance, I said, no, I will not do women and girls. I was present once. I'm not sure whom I was talking to, but Lucy Mayer was there, and I said to this person, it was on our, after we'd made our first tour and come back, I said, no, I don't want to do the women and girls. I hate women and girls. And Lucy turned around and said, so do I. I loathe women and I detest girls. And this, I think, I, at the time, perceived it as a sort of intellectual thing, that women and girls was a subject below one's intellectual dignity. But I think that was just a rationalization, because I was actually even more shy of the women and girls, because they hadn't got that kind of formal respect behavior that the Gusii men had picked up in their encounters with colonial men. They had mainly never seen a white woman at all, and they used to shriek with laughter and come and feel my hair, and they used to make loud remarks, is she his wife or his daughter, and things like that. And I just shriveled.
How, well, having decided you hated women and girls and you weren't going to do them, did you decide to do something else?
Well, I first constituted myself a sort of general, like secretary and note taker and bottle washer, and I sat in on every interview. A lot of this field work in this first tour was done by interviewing, because the local colonial authority had told Philip they wanted a study of land law and one or two other things, and that was the sort of subject for which it was suitable to call elders and talk it out with them. So I sat by. There was someone who translated, and I sat by and wrote everything down with a steel-dipped pen in enormously fast handwriting. And I think actually this was very valuable. I took these very copious notes. I never missed a word. And the result of that is that when we looked at material afterwards, I think we can say the material never let us down. One person working alone can't do that, so it is useful to have another person. I don't say it should necessarily be the wife. Perhaps people could take turns, but it does give both of you a sort of deep knowledge of material.
Are there any other ways in which you think a husband and wife working in the field together, there are advantages?
Well, I would certainly now, if I went back, I would like a short go and quote do the women and girls, although I would by now realise that if you're 23 and just married, it's not the thing to try to quote do mature women, but I would have very much liked to make contact with girls and women at my own life stage. And whatever anybody says about Margaret Mead, I think that was an absolutely splendid idea when she was 23.
Did you... You said you shrunk back from this physical and emotional contact with the women there. Did this last permanently? I mean, have you always felt that in fieldwork, or...?
I don't think I showed it as a shrinking. And I was, of course, not in any way antagonistic or contemptuous of people. It was just that I felt very shy and couldn't open up. Mm. And so my role became that of questioning and taking notes, but not being in any sense a Margaret Mead or a participant observer.
Did you ever participate? I mean, did later you wear a native costume or join in the native dances or...?
Well, that's another story. All that only happened to me much, much later in South Africa. It's part of another story.
Well, can you start that story? Yes.
Well, as I say, I felt this split between wanting to work intellectually or humanly. And I see my whole 30-odd years in or around anthropology as slowly moving towards the human. And in the end, I think making a kind of synthesis. And this happened to me in South Africa in the early 1970s when we had gone back on study leave after 5 years in Durham. And up till then, first I had worked with Philip on the Gusii, and then I had done my own work on the Gusii, which was very theoretical, kinship theory and stuff. And then I had worked with Philip in South Africa, but again, not having the human contact, more interested in network theory and whatever. And now I was really working on my own. And it began with my going back to the Gusii material to do something about the domestic mores. And in some way which I can't quite account for, it suddenly dawned on me that the domestic mores of the Gusii, the avoidances and so-called taboos and the division of labour and so on, were one great big patriarchal con. And I began suddenly to see the relation between this and the status of women in the society altogether. And it was at this point that I got suddenly interested in the whole women's movement, the whole question of gender, and began to look at black women in Grahamstown, that's where we were living in South Africa, with those eyes. And At about the same time, I joined the Black Sash, which is a women's anti-apartheid movement. And this brought about two results. First of all, now for the first time, I was really intellectually confronting what the system was and what it was doing. I was reading and talking and thinking about aspects of the South African macro society that I had just vaguely well recognized but not taken to heart. And secondly, I began working in an advice office which we ran in our area for local black people. And I suppose this kind of reactivated my social worker training. But anyway, now suddenly I began relating to black people individually. And I began perceiving the people as humans and the people's plight as something else. I didn't just see people as creatures of their plight, but as individuals who were trying to make their own lives within that terrible framework. And now this meant that I could, when I had the chance, I could participate. For instance, Philip and I went to a ritual where a family were going down to the river to carry out a rite which they had omitted to do for the presumed dead husband and father who had vanished 20 years ago. And we have a film of this. And at the beginning of the ceremony, I'm sitting here clapping like this because the whole group of people are sitting in the hut clapping. And the diviners are dancing around in the center of the hut. And at the end of the film, I'm clapping like this. And somehow that sums up for me the meaning of that time in my life. I was able to let go. And this led me straight into the work which I'm still doing. And I don't even know whether it's anthropology, it probably isn't. But it is the thing closest to my heart of anything I've ever done. This is a study of the everyday life of black people, especially women, in this town, with a collection of oral life stories which they told me, some of which I taped and transcribed, and some I wrote down in my well-practiced fast hand, and some were spoken in Xhosa and translated for me. And as a background to that, I look at aspects of the macro system that brings in this sort of intellectual pattern making, which I have always enjoyed. So I see this as somehow bridging the gap between the intellectual and the human. And there's another gap too, which is, I think this is a problem for anyone who works in South Africa who has any feelings at all, that the system is so gruesome, it is so horrible. What pleasure, what joy can there be in confronting this? And yet if you don't confront it, you know that you are leaving out the main part of what you ought to be doing. So, in short, it's a very depressing field. And by nature, I'd much rather write about something joyful. I'd like to write about religion and about music and things that mean something to me in my own life. From this work, as I say, I learnt to look at the people on the one side and their plight on the other side. And so I can find something joyful. I've got past that stage where you use the people to illustrate the evils of the macro system, and where you write little case histories beginning, Mrs. X is a widow who was driven out of the urban area and she has five children, all that stuff. You know, I now see Mrs. X as a human being with a lot more in her life than the harsh realities of South African political economy.
Are you going? You're going back to do further work?
Well, we are supposed to be going back for 2 or 3 months later this year. My problem is that having been away from the field so long, I shall probably find a lot of changes and start writing down a lot more notes. I don't need that. I've got far too many.
Yes. Are you presumably both apprehensive and also half looking forward to going back?
Yes, I'm apprehensive because I know that things have got even worse for people. I mean, they do get worse all the time, no matter what the papers say. The changes are superficial, but the more it changes, the more it remains the same. And I am apprehensive. I don't really want to face all that misery.
Well, that's very brave of you, and to go back. Is that... we have a number of students who go out, either married couples or
yes.
Girls who go out to difficult fieldwork situations.
Yes.
Is there any other advice you could give to them or suggestions?
Well, maybe they ought to read Laura Bohannon's Return to Laughter.
Your experience suggests that's an authentic and...
Well, my experience wasn't like hers at all, but if anybody is finding problems in the field, I think she describes them so luminously, it would surely help anybody else.
Hmm. Good. Well, I think we'll thank you very much indeed for talking to us,
thank
and
you.
Wish you luck in your return.
Thank you.